Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:57, and that is Pacific Summer Time. And today is May 26th, and a quiet day overall, with following two fairly impressive day rally on our 2 day impressive rally on Wall Street, and pretty impressive follow through in Europe and in much of Asia. It was a quiet day, so. Yeah, not much going on, and part of the reason for that is because the S&P 500 is pretty close. I think it's only about 42-43 points away from its all-time high, and on an index of almost 2100 points, that's really not very much. So I think people are asking who's going to be the first person to pay a new all-time high for the index, and there is obviously a little bit of reticence at that prospect. So we get some consolidation, or we get a little bit of a pause here, and the S&P is pretty much unchanged on the day. The Dow Jones looks like it's going to close in negative territory, but only very mildly so. And the majority of indices in Europe were up less than 1%. Both the CAC and the DAX up almost 0.7%. So they were about the best performers, and the Swiss market was probably the best performer today. Then in Asia, again, a fairly quiet day, and the Philippines, which had that big move on the election of Rodrigo Duterte, then he represents a polarizing figure, and there has been some excitement that he would introduce reforms in terms of the governance of the country to improve both egalitarianism, but also the management of the bureaucracy in the country. So, but the Philippine index has paused, at least paused, just over the last couple of days, but it still remains a recovery candidate. When we look at the oil price, and that was perhaps the thing that made most headlines today, because Brent crude very briefly rallied above $50. It got up to $50.53, but is actually closing out the day down almost a dollar off the peak. And hardly surprising that we get a little bit of consolidation in the region of a psychological big round number like $50, because people obviously start to ask questions once you get to a big number like that, saying, well, how much further is it going to go? At what point is it that we're going to see US production starting to pick up again, with the ability of drillers to be able to hedge their production well out for a year at in excess of $50? So yes, we do get a little bit of consolidation there, and it is worth considering that with oil prices having particularly Brent having had such an orderly advance, that a reaction of greater than $7 would be required to question the consistency of that move. But when you look at the oil shares, that they have also closed their respective over extensions relative to their trend means. And in fact, both the FTSE 350 oil and gas index and the S&P 500 energy index are both trading above their respective trend means. And this has been an orderly consolidation. And then, provided they can hold that, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to recovery potential. But of course, we won't really know what the medium-term outlook is for oil prices until we see the first substantial pullback. And there isn't any evidence that that is about to occur just yet, but it will eventually occur. And then we'll know at what point prices will find support. And I continue to believe that natural gas represents about the best template we have for the oil price, and not least because the marginal source of production right now is unconventional oil and gas, and because of the requirement to continue drilling and the early decline rates, and which follow prolific initial sources of supply, it means that they can be turned on and off relatively quickly. It means then that unconventional oil and gas can respond quite quickly if prices go well high enough to convince them that it is worth their time to drill, and then just by stopping drilling, that the supply gets choked off relatively short time. That's exactly what we saw in natural gas. and natural gas prices have been pretty depressed for much of the last 6 years. And right now, they're trading just below $2. And the lower side of the range is around 150, and the upper side of the range is just above 4. Of course, from trough to peak, that's in excess of 100%. And oil prices from trough to peak haven't quite rallied by 100% yet, but we're really not that far away from that either. So that is certainly something to bear in mind. Then in the precious metal markets today, gold was firmer in early trading, but finished down on the day and is around the 1219 area. And there is potential for support to start coming in around $1,200. So we're really not that far away from it. And we've had a fairly sharp pullback already. In fact, it was a failed upside break at the upper side of the range, and we're pretty close to the lower side of the range right now. And that's a pretty textbook from the chart seminar. So we're back in an area where we would anticipate that some support should be found if the medium-term bullish hypothesis is going to be reasserted. And that's certainly the case too with silver. Now, silver was quite a bit firmer, but wasn't able to hold it today. It did finish in positive territory, and palladium was the one that was able to hold the majority of its gains today. It was up 12. Then when we look at the government bond sector, bonds were a bit firmer in here today. So the yield coming back down a little bit with just a little bit of pause in the stock market. But by and large, the potential for the yield curve to continue to flatten suggests that we are going to have a more difficult environment, or at least bond investors are going to have to be much more judicious in what part of the curve they decide to buy, and then what bonds inside the part of the curve they select that they're going to buy. It's not going to be the kind of momentum driven market that we've had over the last few years, but rather a much more challenging environment overall. So and I think something that we wrote about quite a bit last year, but is probably worth revisiting this year, and I might write a bit about it tomorrow just to emphasize this point, but it is that bond funds don't have a yield to maturity. They have to constantly buy and sell bonds to maintain the duration of their portfolios. And if that's the case, then they do very well in a momentum-driven environment where the price of the bond continues to go higher. But in an environment where prices are falling, then they don't have the yield to maturity. They can't just hold the bonds to maturity, because that really would mess with their duration. So they either have to get incredibly creative with how they structure the time or the maturity profile of their portfolio, or they're really going to underperform. And that suggests that bond funds, rather than individual bonds, represent where the risk lies in the bond market. Because if you own a bond, and provided it doesn't default, then you're going to get your money back in one way, shape, or form when that bond matures. But that is not the case with bond funds, and particularly bond ETFs, because what they're doing is tracking an index. And those indices are based upon a duration. So it's like a 5-year index or a 10-year index, and that means the bonds they hold have to maintain by and large around that maturity profile. Then if one has a bond fund, then you really do have to look at it, because it's unlikely to continue to perform in line with yields. They now represent a derivative play on fixed income, which in point of fact, that's exactly the definition of a tracking index, and as a result, a greater source of risk. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.